Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone. Corbin, don't you ever step on my opening ever again. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. Bonus guest, Corbin the dog. He's jumping in quick. So, but we'll talk about him later. Almost certainly, it would appear that his owner did not find a horse tranquilizer in time. But yeah, I'm off the rails, and we only just started. we've only just started. So yes, we're going to talk NXT. This is PWT Talks NXT. Did I mention that? I don't even think I did because of the dog. June 8th, 2021. That is the show we're talking about. We had some enhancement debuts on this show. We had wrestlers not even get named on TV or be named things that they're not really named in one case. And we had a very busy show. It seemed like a rushed. It seems like we really rushed towards this particular takeover, which is odd. And I know it's odd with me saying that because I'm always saying it seems like we never stop talking about the next takeover. But gosh, we got one in a couple of days here. And it really feels like there was a lot of hype left on the table, particularly for that main event. We are going to talk main event first, main event segment, that is, because our main event was not a match. Karrion Kross wanted to call out all of the other men in the Fatal 5-Way, that being Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, Adam Cole, and Johnny Gargano, so he could kick their asses in front of everyone. I don't know why the character of Karrion Kross would want to do this 5 days before he's defending against them. I have no idea. But he wanted to do this for real, because they needed a way to promote this Fatal 5-Way, and there's no really good organic way to get these five guys to the ring at the same time, which is always the trouble with promoting something like a multi-man match on top of your show. But that is indeed the main event of TakeOver In Your House 2021, And that's what we got. He called them all out. They all came out. He took them all down, more or less, and was shown to be the real dominant one. Saito suplexes for everyone, including fake security guys. Adam Cole, who has, to this point, only showed up on the Tron, now shows up via super kick on that moment where we think maybe we're just about to get the fade out. And he lays him out with a super kick. And the enduring shot is Adam Cole standing there with the belt that he wants back, largely to cheers. It seems like this audience is not aware or does not care that Adam Cole is a heel right now. There's a certain segment of the audience that isn't going to boo him just no matter what, even though he's playing like the most despicable version of himself right now. But they put him up against Kross in what is essentially being billed as a five-way where really only two guys have a chance to win. Maybe they'll prove us wrong with a swerve, but this feels so familiar to me. And the match that it's hearkening back to for me is the first Elimination Chamber match, which was Triple H defending against five guys. But it was Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and four guys that weren't going to win, like, at all. And that's how it was promoted all month long. And it really seems like they're sowing doubt, but only the doubt that maybe Adam Cole can take this championship from Karrion Kross. I don't know that I can say I'm excited about this match specifically. I'm actually more excited to see what singles matches spill out from this match. Tom Staupe, who are you, and what did you think about this main event segment?
I am the guy continuing to identify Cal Bloom in every single spot they'll put him in, except for a regular slot on TV. Maybe he just don't got it, but he keeps on popping up as a fake security guard. I am Twitter. That's the handle where where you can find reviews for every single direct-to-DVD Hellraiser sequel. Yes, that's what I've been doing on Twitter lately. Is that a thing that anyone cares about, direct-to-DVD Hellraiser sequel reviews? Well, I got them. And it's yet another week where, damn, I was fully of the mind of doing something completely different tonight until Nathaniel hit us with a message. Oh, right, it's Tuesday. And then I promptly forgot again until I got a DM from a text from Blake of the Blake and Sal Show saying, hey, we good to record tomorrow? Because I will be previewing Takeover in Your House on the Blake and Sal Show this week. So listen to that. But that was my, like, oh, yeah, I guess, all right, I should probably watch this go-home show. So my only thing on this entire segment, and they trickled other stuff throughout the show that I'm sure we'll mention here and there, but my only thing on this entire segment was that Kyle O'Reilly came out saying, you're the most dominating NXT champion we've ever seen, to Karrion Kross, which sure is a thing that you can say, but it also sounds like it's Kyle O'Reilly admitting that he does not have a PW Torch VIP membership and he is not listening to 8 years back, because about 8 years back ago we had somebody a little bit better. So check that out. We've got him for just a little bit longer. We'll be covering something regarding that on Saturday on VIP, Kelly and I will. But the reason that's the only thing I have on this is because we're working on a 2-week build. They're lazily shoveling crap onto this show to try to justify that 2-week build. And now we're at a point where the most intriguing part of this matchup is not even anything that they're showing us on the screen. The most intriguing part of this matchup is the six days ago that we got however many releases it was that freed up a lot of what the NFL would call cap space. It seems to me like that may be in part an effort toward when they're back in front of crowds, they're going to want to seem as fresh as possible. We don't want holdovers, you know, holdover feuds and maybe stale acts from the Thunderdome era. The WWE is going to want as little reason as possible to harken back to the Thunderdome and play replays of it and remind people of it. They want to excite people again when they can get them back in arenas. And I think part of that is going to be using some of this cap space, as it were, some of Braun Strowman's old contract, to call some people up and introduce some fresh acts. So what we were talking about less than 24 hours before these releases happened, with, like, of course Karrion Kross is going to win this, and Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole will probably cancel each other out, and Johnny Gargano will probably do the favors with Pete Dunne getting his spots in here and there. Now, I'm not so sure, because maybe some of the people that we thought were going to be doing those things are now no longer going to be around too much on the NXT brand. Just a thought.
All right. Well, Nate Lindberg, who are you, and what'd you think of this segment?
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the hits and misses for NXT and the SmackDown All Perspective Report. And while I'm talking about the things that I do, I also did a WrestleMania 18 review, then and now episode of Frank Pettiani on VIP. So if you are VIP, check that out. I don't have a whole heck of a lot really to add from what Tom said. I think Tom went pretty much covered everything pretty well, including a lot of, like, the releases and things like that. I'm not going to spend a whole heck of a lot of time on it, but, you know, what I will say is that, you know, where this is an interesting, it's kind of an interesting time in NXT, because there's a lot of things that they could do to keep things fresh and keep things, you know, kind of, just kind of keep things moving and flowing. But they've, they're on a trajectory right now where I think that they're going to be doing something like that. It's going to be kind of a bit of a reset for the NXT brand. And, you know, I am looking forward to seeing what kind of, what happens, you know, after, what the aftermath is of this whole thing. You know, we're seeing, yeah, cause I really don't think Karrion Kross is going to really lose his title here. But I am interested, like you were saying a bit ago, Kelly, I am interested to see what kind of singles title or singles matches come out of this. You know, I feel like, you know, we're probably going to end up seeing Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, you know, continue. But you know, who else is going to continue to feud here, or will we end up seeing somebody take the belt off of Cross and kind of a bit of an upset and see Cross go up to the main roster? You know, kind of what Tom was just talking about, you know, with a lot of these people, a lot of these, like Braun Strowman, now we get an extra $1 million, you know, kicking around, million plus kicking around to hire some new talent or whatever. You know, you move Karrion Kross up to the main roster. He is an act that is definitely ready to go up there. You know, so you move him up to the main roster, you can move some other people around in NXT, you hire some fresher people or whatever. But I am looking forward to see what kind of, you know, what are the singles feuds that come out of this, and where we go, you know, where we go coming out of In Your House. But yeah, I'm not super, super jazzed for this main event myself. And I feel like I should be, but I'm really not. The build's been okay. But I'm not really overly jazzed about it. I'm kind of really more looking forward to the aftermath of it than the actual match itself.
All right. Do you want to email us? You can do that thing. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Let me go to an email before I throw to the phone lines. This is from our friend Jared Behager. Hey, team, it's JB from Detroit. I, for one, am glad that NXT seems to be prominently using Oney Lorcan, even while Danny Burch is sidelined with injury. I think Lorcan quietly does a great job telling a story in the ring as he wrestles his matches, and I think that was evident tonight. I'm glad it seems we'll see Lorcan wrestle again soon with Fish. Also, I think the go-home build to this TakeOver 5-way has been extremely haphazard and clunky. Many of the issues in the promos tonight seem manufactured and forced, and I think it felt like a weird way to end the show, especially with a runover. As always, love the show and go VIP. Yes, it is very easy to create an issue between two guys, but it is not easy to create an issue between five, and to have them all talk about all of the other dudes in this. I think you get away with it a lot in the mid card in matches that aren't meant to be like selling a show, but like as the main event to a show, this is a really bizarre one, especially when you give yourself the handicap of only having 2 weeks to get there and you start it with a three-way match. That isn't even explained why it's happening. This was really some of the strangest build they've ever had to a TakeOver main event. No doubt the match will be full of glorious spots, and we'll talk about some of those afterwards. But it just seems like, I don't know. I don't think Cross is going to lose, but I also don't think there's a better situation for him to lose in. So if he's going to go to Raw or SmackDown essentially undefeated, more or less undefeated, because if he loses, he won't lose. Someone else will. This is, if you want to get the belt off him without killing that mystique and seeing what you might have for him on the main roster in that situation, I guess that's the way to go. We'll talk Lorcan soon enough. And if the guys have anything else on that main event segment, we will get to that. But let me throw to a call. You can call us at 515-605-9345. Let's start with 908. 908, if you are there and if you can hear me, go ahead and tell me who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, it's Nick from Jersey. How you doing?
Hey, Nick from Jersey. Kelly from Egan here. I'm doing okay. How'd you feel the show was tonight?
This show was pretty good. I mean, you know, I always enjoy NXT for what it is. Obviously, I miss the days where it was just on the network. It felt like the fun studio show that we all kind of you know, it was like a kind of like a sneaky little thing that if you're a good, if you're a real wrestling fan, you kind of watched. And, you know, it's gotten away from that for obvious reasons. But I got to say, and you, and I've been listening to the show for a while. This is the first time I'm calling in, obviously, but it's, man, Karrion Kross, I do not like this guy at all. And not like the good kind of heat. He just is boring. And today, I hate that he's talking so much. Like, he's got a manager, I get, or his you know, he's got a valet. It's just like, you know, he kind of looks big and scary. He's got a bald head. He's angry. He's got tattoos. He's got the entrance. But then he opens up his mouth, and he's like clearly some dude from Long Island. And it's just like kills the whole vibe for me. And today when he's calling people out, and it's just, it just ruins it, you know? And so I guess, obviously, I'm just making a comment here. I know that not everybody likes this guy. I mean, some people do. I see his main roster potential because he is sort of a bigger guy, I guess. I can never tell in NXT because, like, everybody's kind of – most of those main roster dudes or top guys in NXT are kind of smaller. So I can't really tell what he's going to look like, you know, going up against, I don't know, Kevin Owens or whatever ends up happening with him when he gets up there. But I guess my question is, this In Your House main event is so, you know, you guys said it, it's pretty slapdash, and I don't like, there's no real build to it, there's no real reason for it, unless he's going to drop the belt, go to, you know, one of the main roster shows or something like that. But I was wondering, like, who of the other guys in this Fatal 5-Way or whatever we're calling it, who do you think really has potential on the main roster? Because, you know, seeing, you know, Cole is so undersized, you know, and going up there and then him being in sort of the Ricochet, weird, you know, lower mid-tier, I would hate that for him. And Kyle O'Reilly, I guess he's a little taller, but he just, I love him. I love his in-ring style. I've been watching him since, you know, indies and stuff like that. But it's just like, I can't see him getting some sort of a character and that part of his game up where it would make sense for him to ever leave NXT unless it was leaving the company completely. So of the other folks, rather than not Kross, obviously, who do you think really has potential for the main roster that's in this main event? Sorry for being so rambly, by the way.
No. We love the rambly. That's great. Yeah, big fan. So we do a lot of it.
I was going to say, have you listened to me?
Listen to Tom and I also on NXT 8 years back. Once we start talking about movies, we forget that it's a wrestling show at some point. So yeah, I mean, if you're looking for an argument pro Karrion Kross, I'm not sure you're going to find it with me. The thing about Kross is that I've kind of been waiting for them to book someone strong from the beginning, not having the whole, okay, you got to wait your turn and you're doing some jobs, but you're on TV and we'll work in when we work in. I love the fact that they have somebody who came in, was dominant from the beginning, had a killer entrance, killer music, memorable from a visual standpoint. And then all these pieces in place to create a real monster and an old school monster, something in NXT that we really don't see. We had Lars Sullivan there for a minute, but he never really figured into the top of the card. But this guy, like, when you, they give us all this sizzle, and then we find out, well, he can't really talk and he can't really wrestle. He's not wrestle on. Everybody's kind of a good wrestler. It's 2021. Like, nobody's getting TV time without being. I mean, we had Chelsea Green botching her own finish. But for the most part, we have people who are very, very competent at what they do. But
it just is amazing that they finally built this, and it's a guy who I don't know. I mean, you almost have to bury him, not bury him, hide him in these kind of event matches to get what you want out of him. As for who else has main roster potential, and I don't know that Cross is big. I don't think he is, but I think it would be very interesting to see him up next to some of those guys on the main roster. I think the best main roster potential actually is Pete. And I think that although he wouldn't be a main eventer up there, I think that he would find a way to get very consistent TV time. He's engaging. You don't need – Tom talks about this a lot, where he's got like this presence where you don't need to be told what he is. He tells you with a couple of visual cues, and then you get it. You can jump in, and he's one of the characters you get immediately. And I think that he could be – and maybe he's just a gatekeeper forever. Maybe he's main roster's Cassius Ohno, like for as long as Ohno was. But I don't know that I see a really great role for any of the others. I love Kyle's style of wrestling as well, but I don't know that they would consider him singles main roster ready right now. Though if they paired him back up with Bobby Fish, then I could see them being a tag team that was very much ready for the main roster. But any other thoughts on all of that, Tom?
I'll tell you what, we are years away from it, but the one thing I am dreading, absolutely dreading in our 8 years back rewatch is a moment when Lars Sullivan was still working squash matches and I was really into his presentation. And the camera caught me getting pretty excited about a Lars Sullivan entrance, and I'm just waiting for you to just be like, dude, come on. We've been doing this together this long, and that's you? Oh, no.
Well, I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
So, Nick, I'm glad you called. Thanks for listening. I'm glad you finally called in. NXT was around this Lars Sullivan time that I'm talking about. There, you know, we had Aleister Black, and on this podcast, we were criticizing his promos, but also saying like, well, you know what? How bad is it really? Because NXT is kind of a live screen test. You can do this kind of thing. Black can work on this, and if they decide, we're not going to go with it on the main roster, then fine. There's proof one way or another what you're going to get when he opens his mouth. So there was a time where I would have been fine with what Cross was doing, even if it's not really working in the moment. But yeah, I think this is a guy that you look at him, like just the act of looking at him, it's like, okay, I can make some money with this dude, but you have to mitigate how you're presenting him. And obviously the talking is a weakness. Obviously, the even more obviously, the constant facial expressions, which we also got a lot of tonight, just that one, I accidentally said facial expressions plural, but it's just the one that he has, which is just so comically false, and it's not becoming of his character, even. It's just like, train this guy to do something different. I don't know if you need to pull a Marlon Brando and stick marbles in his mouth so he can't make that face or something. But, there's stuff that they should be working on with him in that regard. But to answer the question, Pete Dunne is the next one I would consider of the other three for similar reasons that Kelly mentioned. And the one time, I mean, I know they did it on a UK Raw. They did it when he was going out there to beat up Enzo, so that's a leg up already. But his presentation when on the one match he did wrestle on Raw was really effective and was a really good introduction to him. It's almost a shame they didn't just keep him around after that. But my answer is Adam Cole. I know I've said this before, but I do feel that Cole, despite his size, which, of course, I'm forcing myself to be an optimist here because we've seen how Vince operates, and I have the same reasons to be worried as everyone else. But Cole is somebody who, yes, he has the height that he has, but when he's wrestling and when he's cutting a promo, you are not thinking about how tall that guy is. He out wrestles and out talks, you know, how short he'll look next to Drew McIntyre, you know? So I really feel that if they just forced themselves to let him be him, he could easily be a top guy, either heel or face on the main roster.
Nate.
I got to agree. I think Adam Cole's probably the one that's the most polished and ready for the main roster. I think that kind of goes without saying. I think that's, he's probably the one that everybody is looking to anyway, you know, out of all five men in this match. So, you know, if I'm going to kind of stick away from Adam Cole, you know, part of me, not that I think that Karrion Kross is necessarily main roster ready because of, you know, all of the points that you guys made, which we've talked about plenty of times in the show, you know, with him, his, you know, his gimmick is great, but he's, you know, his in-ring performance is, I mean, it's good. I can't knock his performance. He's not a bad wrestler, right? But he's not Johnny Gargano. He's not Tommaso Ciampa. He's not the best, you know, that NXT has to offer in that regard. He's not bad, but he's not, you know, great. Same thing with his promos, things like that. But I think his gimmick itself is tailor-made for the main roster. And I feel like it's something that, if booked correctly, I think the other things can be worked around, similar to how they're doing here. You know, Karrion Kross, well, I don't think is like my, he's not going to go down as my favorite NXT champion. I like the presentation, at least the presentation of what they're doing and how they're booking him to be a quote dominant champion. At least it's the way that they're you know, presenting it. I like the fact tonight that he took out just about everybody in the match before Adam Cole came out, because that kind of played into that whole dominance and everything. And then also kind of plays into, you know, the whole, like, you know, Adam Cole wild card for this match, because obviously it's like Kelly said at the very beginning of the show, it's not a matter of who's going to win the match. It's a matter of, is it going to be Kross or is it going to be Cole? And we kind of have a feeling it's probably, or at least I do anyway, it's probably going to be Kross still, you're victorious here. But yeah, like I said, I think Kross is probably, if it's not going to be Adam Cole, and I'm only saying this because you guys have already said Cole, I'm just making my case for Kross. Pete Dunne is somebody clearly I think could make it as a, you know, probably as that Cassius Ohno spot, you know, gatekeeper type of a role, on the main roster, easily, hands down. He can talk, he can wrestle. I think, you know, he'd be fantastic up there. And I love Kyle O'Reilly. I really do. I love the way he, you know, his in-ring style, everything about him, you know, even just the person himself and, you know, the kind of trials and tribulations he's going to go through. And, especially being a diabetic, that hits close to home because, you know, there's a lot of, diabetes is something that really has affected my family quite a bit over the years. So I kind of, you know, I know what he's going, you know, gone through and stuff, you know, at least just day-to-day management and all that. But regardless, I don't think he's, at least in this current iteration, I feel like he's going to flounder up on the main roster in the way he's at right now. His promo, I feel like he's not bad on the mic. There's just something missing there. He doesn't quite connect with me in the way that I would like to, I'd like him to. It just seems, you know, again, forced, scripted. I almost wish these guys could just get bullet points and go out there and cut the promo they want to cut. At least, you know, more people than actually get that luxury, because I feel like we'd get a much better idea of what these people could actually do once they hit the main roster. If in NXT and on the main roster, they were able to cut the promos that, you know, they wanted to rather than bullet points, because I think that's part of the problem is, like, I can, you know, me, I know personally, like, I can sit here and talk and it sounds, you know, like, fine, but if I was to actually sit here and read something off of, you know, like my notes or whatever, you could tell I was reading. You could tell I was, you know, trying to come across, you know, I might try to come across naturally, but I could tell I was reading something. And that's really kind of, I feel like, the biggest problem with the WWE promo style. And I feel like that's one of the things that's going to really hold Kyle back. But yeah, I think I probably touched on just about everything there, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll move on.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we've only got one other caller with a question. So, Nick, I am going to throw back to you if you want. I've got just enough room for one other thought, if you like. Otherwise, you can give us a audio high five, and we'll move on.
Sure. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for all the answers, too. I agree with you guys. Cole is the man. I mean, we all want him to be the most successful wrestler to ever come out of NXT. I mean, he's just incredible, but God, I just obviously, you know, no faith in any of that if he leaves NXT. You know, you almost hope that these guys don't because, but then again, things are getting stale. So, it it's a weird spot. But, you know, it's a good time to be a wrestling fan, so I'm not going to complain. But one other thing is, this goes without saying. You guys are the biggest Poppy fans in the world, right? I mean, that's why we're getting all this Poppy content. There are so many female wrestlers in NXT, and the fact that Poppy has two segments this week, is she going to get in the ring? I don't know exactly what they're doing here. I don't know why Triple H is so infatuated. I mean, I worked at an undisclosed network where they used to play music videos, and I worked for a television show there, and we had to sort of come up with content for Poppy. And Poppy has changed her attitude, and she used to be, like, very much pop, and now she's, like, heavy metal, industrial, but I know she's... I don't understand where the connection, like, what is the reason that NXT has decided to throw, like, they're selling Poppy t-shirts. What's in it for NXT here? I guess she must be a part of, you know, I don't know, Sony Music or something, and they're promoting NXT or something. Like, what in the world would they spend, like, why would they spend so much time on Poppy? I don't get it. I get that Triple H has terrible taste in music. I get that. But I don't even think that he likes Poppy. I think there's something else going on here. Maybe she's been training and she's incredible. And, she's going to have some insane, you know, Swanton Bomb finisher or something. I don't know what they're planning here for the In Your House. But too long didn't read. How big a fans of Poppy are you guys?
Wow. What a question. I knew we'd pass through Poppy. We'd have to. But yes, it's I don't know what the reason is. I am a fan of Poppy insofar as they play such bad music on WWE pay-per-views that her slightly less bad music than most of it is such a breath of fresh air. She's like a little, she's significantly less bad than some of them. But I've tweeted at the bands that were the NXT theme song because of how bad the music was. As for what's in it for them, it's, I don't know. I'm with you in that it seems like there's some kind of cross promotion, some kind of money that somebody's getting out of this or some favor that's happening that we couldn't possibly ever know the answer to. That seems like it could be maybe part of this. I too thought maybe she's training and is some kind of secret one match superstar, but they seemingly dashed that. I think there's less than meets the eye here. I literally think she was only there to, I think it made sense to have her there for Io Shirai's return because they've got that history. But I think that it was just kind of a confluence where she's scratched their backs. They'll scratch hers now. And this is an NXT 5-track EP that's being dropped. What a weird, weird thing for her to be doing in her career. I don't know if she likes wrestling or not, but it's hilarious to me thinking of young pop singer Poppy really wanting to make it in music. And if you could go back
15 years to when she was 2 years old. I don't know how old she is, but she looks so young. And just say, hey, when you make it, you're going to be doing hype songs for pro wrestlers. If they wanted to give TV time to a hype song to somebody, a hype man who wrote really, really good wrestling themes, they never should have fired Josiah Williams, because that guy was starting to make some fire themes right at the time they got rid of him. I don't know. Too long, didn't read. I don't know what they could possibly be gaining out of this, but my assumption is that for now it's over. Nate?
I'm not a big Poppy fan myself. I really don't know much about Poppy other than she shows up on NXT every once in a while, and she does Io Shirai's entrance music. When I heard that Poppy was going to be on the show this week, obviously they announced it last week, it really didn't even occur to me that we might see an Io Shirai return. So I'm kind of tying that in, I guess, with this here a little bit. But I got to give credit where credit is due. One of the contributors to Torch, Amin Ajani, DM'd me earlier in the week, and he's like, hey, with Poppy coming back, you think Io Shirai might come back? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even put two and two together. So I got to give him credit there for pointing that out. Cause I didn't quite figure that one out. But I think it made sense with her coming back here, kind of just for the to be there for Io Shirai, and her return. It was just kind of cool to see that, you know, see that there. And I think it was also partially to hype that EP or that 5-track EP that she dropped tonight. I don't know what the relationship is myself. I mean, I'm kind of going under the assumption that it's something for, and I'm feeding the dog, I apologize. The dog takes over my life. I don't know what the association is between the two of them. Like, it doesn't seem like it's something like with Bad Bunny, though, where Bad Bunny has aspirations to, you know, get in the ring and things like that. And he actually, you know, performed well and all of that. So I don't think it's anything like that. I don't think she's, and I mean, I haven't heard anything about her training or anything. I'm sure if there was any like inkling about it, like it would have been, you know, somebody would have at least either pointed it out to me, or I would have come across it, or one of us would have come across it. So I haven't heard anything about that. I wouldn't be surprised either, if all of a sudden, like, it was like, you know, she was going to be in some sort of a tag match with Io Shirai, against the Way or something like that. Io could protect her and everything. She could maybe just do a couple spots throughout the match and that'd be that. And maybe that is something that they want to do with the success of Bad Bunny and even Pat McAfee, for that matter. I know he's not a musician, but, being somebody from outside the business, having a one-off a two-off incredible match. I'm not really sure, but I think if nothing else, it's probably just there's some sort of a business relationship there, whether WWE was introduced to Poppy was introduced to WWE, maybe Poppy's a WWE fan, maybe somebody WWE is a fan of hers, but there's just some sort of a business relationship there where, and, you know, I think Kelly said it the best, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Just, you know, it think back to like the Rock and wrestling days. I mean, anybody that they could get their hands on, you know, they would. Obviously she's not somebody in the caliber of like Cyndi Lauper was back in the day. But, you know, WWE has always tried to make those mainstream associations throughout the years. You look back to the days where they had the hosts of the Raw, hosts of Raw and all that, the guest hosts that half of them didn't even know what wrestling was and would call things like SummerSlam, Summerfest. I don't even remember who that guy was. I just remembered he called him Summerfest. That's kind of my two cents on it. I have no idea. It's all speculation, but that's kind of at least what I think about it.
Yeah, don't hire people that aren't wrestling fans to do wrestling. Like Michael Buffer, like, set aside the fact that I think that he just sucks and brings nothing to anything he does. But like, he came out and said Bret the Hitman Clark. And it, like, you had two names to learn.
Oh my God.
For this giant payday. And then the first time they used Mike Adamley, they brought him in, and the first wrestler that he had to talk about was Jeff Hardy, and he called him Jeff Harvey.
Adam Lee. Oh, man. I brought him up on like two of my last four podcasts. Let's all forget about him again together. Tom?
Can I throw Jeremy Piven on the let's all forget about him pile? I wish I could forget about Jeremy Summerfest Piven. Also, Amin only has eyes for EO, so no surprise that he predicted this. Love you, Amin. And Josiah has been back for a while. I guess he was only furloughed, or maybe he was canned, and then they decided to bring him back. But he's the one who gave us Cameron Grimes' new theme, so there's at least that.
He was on the list like a week ago, I think.
Oh, was he? Oh, okay.
I'm almost positive. Yeah.
All right, I'm Googling it.
I was like, Kelly, right. That's uncharacteristic of you, but okay, I guess I was the one who missed that. Wow. All right. My only exposure to Poppy, I mean, you know, I love the sarcastic question, how much do we like Poppy? Legitimately, we were sarcastically joking about Poppy before we went on the air, or I won't accuse these guys of it. The uproarious laughter before the blog talk lady cut us off, let me tell you. My only exposure to Poppy is through NXT. So I was sort of assuming, like, all right, probably not to the level of a Bad Bunny, but maybe this is a Bad Bunny thing where I just don't know who she is and I have to take everybody else's word for it that I'm just the one with my finger off the pulse. That's totally easy to believe for me in my 30s. But it sounds like, Nick, you've got your finger way more on the pulse of who Poppy is, and you're still asking that question. So that probably tells me all I need to know there. I will say that with all of that out there, I actually found Poppy's involvement tonight pretty agreeable. When she's promoted for a show, I just assume that she's going to be doing a musical performance, which would be weird for a go-home show as opposed to a takeover, and maybe we'll still get that, even though if we were, you'd think that they would have announced it. Maybe she'll have a song, or maybe she'll have multiple songs, since apparently there are multiple songs on this thing. Maybe she'll have songs all across the hype packages before the matches. But you know, her music makes me want to tear my eardrums out. So the fact that we didn't get that was a good thing. And setting aside, looking at it more objectively, I actually think the live EP drop was a pretty fun ploy. Fun is not the word. I appreciated the ploy, because even though I feel that way about her music, it was so immediate and right now that for as stagey as that whole segment was, I was still like, and I didn't do this, but I was still kind of like, I kind of want to pull up Apple Music and see if the EP actually is there now. Like, it made me curious in the moment. And then, so that was at least a success there. And they wrapped it around multiple things. They wrapped multiple things around it, that being the index bit, which, to be fair, it feels like we missed a step. Candace is just suddenly cool with index, which is either she is, or she's being further manipulative of Indy. But either way, whichever way we're supposed to be taking that, it feels like we missed the step between what we saw last and her just coming out and saying, you know, you knew that was Indy's man. Index is a thing. So we missed something there. But then also, I really thought this was an effective way. It was quick. It was just, you know, rushed out on a rushed show. But it was a fun, effective way to bring back EO that I think really helps boost EO's her effectiveness. How did I had a better word in my notes, but I'm not gonna try to look for it. It boosts something of appeal. That's the word. It boosts her appeal because, you know, we all already respect EO's work, but she just got off a really impressive run, proving herself that much more as the top woman on the brand. And she spent some time away, forcing us to miss her and wonder about her and want her back on the show. So having this cute little surprise with somebody who we, yes, I wasn't predicting it like Amin was, but it is somebody that we do associate with EO. So when she makes that cute little thing, that triggers something in our mind like, oh, could it be? And then when it is, we're that much happier to see her. And she's wearing a color of gear we haven't seen her wear in a long time. And there were just a lot of little ingredients here that I thought were really boosted how I perceive EO. It was a good return that I feel like I will remember as one of the reasons why I enjoy her on my TV screen.
Yeah, Poppy's involvement didn't really bug me. By the way, since nobody asked, my favorite NXT theme for a pay-per-view easily is Shock Me by Baroness. Baroness's album Purple is one of my favorite metal albums of the last 10 or 20 years. Love it. Sludgy stoner music. Not too sludgy.
War Pigs.
Oh, yeah, they did use War Pigs, but that doesn't count. War Pigs is like 40 years old. I'm talking stuff that was in the now, Nate, in the now.
Like Judas by Fozzy, which is totally associated with the NXT brand.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, yeah, there's a song I hate, but man, do fans in the live show just love it. So what am I going to do? Talk about a lot of music I don't like, but let's not get off the rails because we haven't covered that many things on this show yet. Let's go to our other caller. This is Durrell from Georgia. Oh, we got a lot of sound in the background for Durrell. Durrell, do you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. My bad.
Sorry, I kind of dropped that on you really quick out of nowhere.
Yeah. That's no problem. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing quite all right, Durrell. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Well, tonight was an interesting, wow, creative, I guess, type of show that they tried to make, atmosphere, with all the different stuff, I guess, having security. I guess they boosted up on their security after listening to you guys last week, wondering where the security was. But pretty good show. My first thing that I want to come at you guys about would be the match that was the main event. And you had Dakota Kai versus Ember Moon. And with that match and how it went down with Raquel Gonzalez getting the DQ for against Ember. And with Ember turning her move against her into a modified Eclipse. And hit her and leave her land with another Eclipse to build on that maybe she could do something just because of that move. Even though this is a quick build, I thought that was the right way to do it to make that match even more interesting. What did you guys like about the match between Dakota Kai and what they did at the end?
Yeah, so what I liked about the match between Ember and Dakota was damn near everything. I really liked this match quite a bit. This went 12 minutes and 30 seconds. I know that sounds like a fake number, but that's where I clocked it, 12:30. Ember wins by DQ. And really, like, what other finish is there here? You can't job out Ember, no matter if you're the greatest Dakota Kai fan or not, and I am. So you can't job her out here, Ember, if you're going to make her a serious threat to Raquel. But of course, Raquel would do this in kayfabe. She would right now because she's a little more heel right now. They have her surf a little bit across the line every now and then if they feel the need. But at any rate, I actually was a big, big fan of Eclipse giving the visual knockout to show her vulnerable in a way that they really haven't since she, like, people forget. I think they've done a pretty good job of making people forget that she was an unstoppable monster who did indeed get stopped a bunch of times and lost some matches to Rhea before their big blow off where she beat Rhea. And Raquel took her L's. But yes, this,
I thought was very effective. Probably was my favorite match of the night. I'm looking through, and everything was, I mean, nothing was disagreeable on this show, but yeah, this is probably the one that sticks the most. So, again, it feels like this was rushed. If you would ask me 3 hours before the show, okay, who is Raquel facing at TakeOver, I would have said maybe Ember, but maybe also nobody yet. And I think I would have gotten it right, but I'm not 100%. So it feels rushed, but I was in favor of the Eclipse, Tom.
I think a lot of what they were doing tonight was, you know, there's no way to get around the fact that this TakeOver build is rushed. So they were just adding what they could for better in this case, but for worse in a lot of other cases, but for better here, because you got to give commentary something to talk about. And they just had enough, you know, interactions here and there with Raquel at ringside and then with the altercations afterward to give them more to talk about than the generic stuff that they already had. So that's fine. And you know, the match itself, it was easily the match of the night on a match that, in my opinion, had zero other memorable matches. If you ask me, maybe tomorrow, but if you ask me a week from now what matches took place on this show, I'll remember this one, but I won't remember a single other one. And it seemed like Kai and Moon were having fun in there with the spots that they were working in, and it's just nice to see Ember Moon in a singles capacity again. She could still take it down a notch and a half. I hope she didn't learn anything from Shotzi during that tag team debacle. But yeah, it's just, you know, if you want to get a good match, you can call on Kai and Moon, and they'll give it to you, and they did.
Nate.
I think I agree, probably match of the night. It was really, yeah, I think it was the only memorable match. I actually had to go back at my notes to remember the matches. That's how bad my memory is compared to yours, Tom. I couldn't remember what else was on the show as you were saying that. I was like, hey. Before I forget, Josiah Williams, he has been released, according to a tweet as of about 9 days ago. So there's that. I did look that up. But, yeah, I think you know, Raquel is I think Raquel is she's a pretty dominant champion right now. I think Kelly made a good point. They've kind of did a good job of making people forget that she has lost quite a few times. Because I mean, I certainly did. You know, until you brought that up, I was like, oh yeah, she really hasn't. You know, she has been pretty dominant. I kind of did forget about some of those losses. So I think that is a really good point, because that definitely helps to shape that perception. You know, of her. This match here was, I think, just because Ember won and she did kind of have a dominant win, or not a dominant win, but she got that dominant visual win rather, because it was obviously a DQ here, but she got that dominant visual win with those two eclipses at the end. I mean, WWE booking tells me that means she's not going to win at TakeOver, which I think is kind of a general consensus here with all of us. But I did like the fact that they did that, and they gave her that dominant visual win towards the end, at the end of the segment, because it does make things, you know, Darrell said it makes things a little bit more interesting coming into this rushed build here. You know, it gives you a little bit more to talk about, a little bit more to sink your teeth into. And, you know, it just overall just fleshes things out. So I'm definitely okay with it. But yeah, I think this definitely was the match of the night for me as well. Ember has, you know, we've talked about it quite a bit. I have not liked Ember, in her tag team with Shotzi. So seeing her get back to singles is kind of a breath of fresh air for me anyway with Ember. I'd like to see a little bit more of that biker chick that she was doing. Cause like tonight her gear just reminded me a little bit more of, it was like a little more generic. I want to say generic cause it wasn't either, but it didn't quite have that same edge. And maybe she's trying to get away from that. I don't know, but it didn't quite have that same edge as it did when she came back. And as she kind of had with Shotzi. So maybe she's trying a little bit of something a little bit different here, but I think that she should go back to that edge a little bit more, because personally, I think that was working pretty well for her before she joined up with Shotzi. The only thing I'd change is get rid of a lot of that, two things I'd change. One, get rid of a lot of that, like, high school, you know, girl bickering that they would do backstage, making fun of other people, and stuff that kind of just seemed, came off really heelish that we've talked about in the past. And I'd also say slow down a little bit. I did feel like she was, the match was a little bit, I don't say, it wasn't rushed, but it fast-paced. I guess the pace is a little bit fast. Just wanted to, and that's just NXT as a whole. I wish that people would just kind of slow down a little bit. But other than that, yeah, I think anything would just really be nitpick. So thumbs up for me, and I am looking forward to seeing her and Gonzalez clash on Sunday.
All right, Darrell, if you've got another one, and I know you do, then go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Now, I'm mixed two things together. We had the introduction of the winner takes all, which is, I guess, something that they had to add on to add more interest to that matchup. Since, again, this is something that they quickly put in together. But I like what they did at the end of that and teased maybe the next challenger, and that's from Hit Row. And then we seen the Swerve versus Killian Dane, which was a pretty nice match. You see Swerve being a little bit more aggressive, changed the style a little bit more. The looks that he's making in the ring is just so devious and cruel. So I liked everything about it. Maybe that's the next challenger on the horizon and winner of maybe that title. But how did you guys like that, and how did you guys like the introduction of the winner takes all and the maybe potential introduction of the next challenger?
So, yeah, the winner takes all thing, thanks, I hate it. This to me is the kind of main roster. This is like a WCW convention, putting up belts in matches where they just should not be, like where they had this time where they had gotten so far away from tag team matches during Vince Russo's time there that the tag team championship match was a singles match. And that drove me crazy. I do hate that the North American Championship is on the line in this match. If this was the match they always wanted, and they had to add that on to add intrigue, but they have no plan to move these titles yet right away, that's fine. Now, all of this said, the only thing that could hurt it more from a booking silliness standpoint is to add another team. But I like Hit Row so much that I would not be sad if Hit Row got added and then won all the championships because I love Hit Row more than any other act on this show. Absolutely bar none. I love them. My wife watched the show with me for the first time in probably 6 or 8 weeks tonight. And when Hit Row came out and Brianna Brandy walked by, she goes, "That girl's got legs for days." I've never heard my wife say anything like that. But she's not wrong. But yeah, it's the match was fine. Swerve going over Dane was predictable, but I think a good building block on getting Swerve to. I think Swerve can be on top. I absolutely 100% think he can be on top of NXT. I've always thought so, and now that he's found this character, I'm like, oh, I didn't know that he was going to do it as a heel. But I think this character can and should be at the top of NXT. I want, like, if I was booking right now, Swerve would be the champion within 6 months. No doubt. So yeah, Swerve versus Dane was fine. 6:38 on the night where there was way less wrestling than usual, like 18 minutes less than the average, 36 minutes and 58 seconds. But that's a go-home show that needed a lot of storytelling as part of it. So that was that match. And yeah, don't love the stipulation. I'll get over it. And they're not going to change the titles anyway. I don't think, and it's going to be harmless, and it'll be a fun opener for the 5-match pay-per-view. Tom?
I don't disagree with you. Your little "I don't think, at the end of there is exactly the reason why I'm actually okay with this, because the tag match was not going to, the tag title match only was not going to get on the takeover card. And Bronson versus Escobar is a pretty easy pick for Bronson, I think. And I feel like Escobar can absorb that win on his way up toward, toward the top. Or it could just be like the first of, in a series with Bronson. So putting this together puts a little bit more of a question mark on it for me. Still a pretty easy pick in favor of the faces, but now I am wondering if they look at, you know, what they've got in MSK and Bronson, and they're like, Legado del Fantasma is looking pretty good though. So, you know, it's a question mark. Darrell, I appreciate you squishing these two together since they just flowed into one another. So there's really not too much else to say on Escobar's promo there. Although this was the part of the show that my partner happened to be watching with me. She was sitting on the couch and she looked at Escobar's suit and she said, you know, with that hair and that suit, he looks like Andrea Lo blah blah blah, you know, Charlotte's guy. And that just was hilarious to me. So that's my only note on that entire segment. And then when Swerve came out, I mentioned we've been watching the Hellraiser movies. She said, you know, with that robe and those teeth, he kind of looks like a Cenobite. And I was like, you know what? You're not wrong. So Dane and Swerve, if I had remembered this show was happening tonight, this would have been the match that I was looking forward to because I admire both of these guys. I didn't think they had much chemistry in this particular match. There was just some stuff where it seemed like there was a half step missing between the two of them. So
a couple of miscues, yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one who noticed it. Just some stuff where, like halfway through trying to transition into something, Swerve would realize something and then be like, "Oh, I've got to go do this instead," or you know, whatever. It just didn't come off great, but whatever, because the whole reason this match seems to exist was to introduce us to how Hit Row is going to play into Swerve matches. And Prize, it's not super creative. It's just them distracting from the outside, but doing it in their own unique way, which was the most entertaining part of this match. If I want to get even more specific on Brianna Brandi's legs, those platform boots she was wearing were fantastic. But yeah, I think that's the reason this match existed. So success there, even if two consummate guy, more than consummate guys between the ring, unfortunately just didn't click on this particular evening.
Nathaniel.
Yeah, I completely agree on the match. It was, it was okay, but there was definitely some mismatched chemistry there. I certainly noticed that myself. In terms of the stipulation though, I'm not in love with it. Let's put it that way. I would much rather see, you know, this title separate, you defend it separately. But I was, in the moment, I was actually kind of excited about it, believe it or not. And it does seem, you know, main rostery and all of that, and, you know, and to your points and all of that, I agree. But the thing that really stood out to me was the fact that Legado del Fantasma could win all the titles in a kind of dastardly way, put more heat on them. Now, I don't think that they're going to win, but that seed gets planted in your head, at least got planted in my head, that maybe they can, and maybe they will, unseat these faces here, that a lot of people do seem to like. I know MSK, maybe not so much, but people do seem to be behind Bronson Reed anyway. But, you know, maybe they could unseat them and kind of dastardly take all of the titles away, just in one match. And I don't want them to go to this all the time. I would much rather see, like I said, I'd much rather see the titles defended, you know, individually as they should be. It's kind of like, you know, when you put the WWE title or your main title in, you know, up for grabs in the Royal Rumble or in a, you know, Elimination Chamber or something, even a multi-man match. For that matter, you know, it kind of takes away from what the belt means because you're not trying, it's not a one-on-one contest to see who's the best, at least in a kayfabe sense anyway. So, with all of that said, I'm still actually kind of excited about, you know, winner takes all. It's not a step that I thought I would be, but I kind of am. I think just simply because Legato's involved. If they did, you know, personally, you know, and to Kelly's point as well, if Hit Row did get involved in this, you know, thrown in last minute, which I don't think they will. I think they're going to probably be the next opponents for MSK, and Swerve's going to be going up against Reed. But if they did get thrown into this and they won all the titles, that would be my ideal outcome for this, because I think that would be fantastic. You know, if that was the, you know, for the winner takes all anyway. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to, you know, the title's going to remain around the waist of the people that currently hold them. But I think it is just an interesting, kind of an interesting hook to get you to watch in your house. I think it'll be, it probably is going to be a, you know, good opener. If it is the opener, I think it'd be a great way to kick it off.
No question. This is the opener. Nothing else. I mean, the ladder match could, but I think it'll be this one. Let's talk ladder match. So Ted DiBiase has been grooming a couple of guys, Cameron Grimes and LA Knight, and they're having a war of who can be more insufferable to the other. Yeah, a lot of talking here. What I like about this one, despite the weird heel-heel dynamic where it seems like they're just leaning into the idea that Grimes has to be the slightly more baby face of the two, because he does kind of get a little bit more of that reaction. LA Knight, despite the incredible level of work he's doing, not getting like the cheers, even though I think everybody recognizes how good he is at his act. So DiBiase is going to, the much teased $1 million belt is on the line in a ladder match between Cameron Grimes and LA Knight, and the winner will carry that around. And what I love about this is I could see either one of them winning. I could see either one of these pricks having a prop to carry around and talk about how awesome they are, no matter if they lose. And just like DiBiase himself, he doesn't have to put it on the line. It's not going to be a seventh championship on this show, I hope. It is going to be just more of a prop that I think, gosh, could really work for either one of them. Like, Grimes seems like the more natural fit character-wise, but if Knight is going to be the one who stays heel and Grimes maybe isn't, then maybe Knight is the one that you want to put over. But I'll be intrigued by this. As weird as it is that this match was booked at all, Nate?
I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I am 100% in favor of LA Knight winning this and carrying the $1 million championship, because I feel like Cameron Grimes is about to do his face turn. We felt a lot of – I felt some shades of that tonight, where he started taking off the Rolex. And he's like, I don't need money and this, that, the other thing. It was like – That was a face move. That was a face move right there. Now, you know, with some of the erratic booking in NXT and WWE lately, who knows what's going to happen next week or even on Sunday. But that said, I feel like that is the direction for Cameron Grimes right now. And the $1 million championship needs to be around the waist of a heel. It just has to be around the waist of a heel. LA Knight, man, some of the stuff, like, okay. When he turned around and he called, I forget who it was. There was a woman in the background. It was one of the girls that was either putting the robe on him, a bathrobe on him, or taking the robe off of him in that backstage vignette earlier in the night. Or he was not backstage; he was in a house or something. He turned around, and he called her Toots, and then he just kept going. And I just thought that was great. Now, I'm not like his whole presentation, his promo style, everything like. I think with the $1 million championship around his waist, he's going to come off as such a prick, insufferable. and he's going to be able to use that $1 million championship. And I called it like a Rolex last week. It's basically like an accessory. And I feel like that's kind of the direction that they're going to go with it. You know, it's going to be an accessory, and he's going to be able to, LA Knight's going to be able to use that accessory to really, really generate some heat. Cameron Grimes, we've loved Cameron Grimes for how long now, right? Cameron Grimes doesn't need that accessory. Cameron Grimes is the accessory. Not that LA Knight needs it, but I can certainly see him benefiting more from it right now, being the newer character. I think he'd be completely fine without it, but I can see him using it as a way to catapult himself and launch himself to another another level here. So I think that's the direction they're going to go. That's just me, but since we heard the Million Dollar Man's name. We didn't even see him on TV, but just in that random skit where Cameron Grimes started cursing Million Dollar Man, I wanted to see Million Dollar Man come back, and I wanted to see Million Dollar Championship come back. And I'm so glad we finally got that tonight.
Tom.
So I felt that they finally, at long last, made the move to turn Grimes' face a couple weeks ago, and I feel like tonight was still very much in that mold. I'm taking Grimes as the clear face and Knight as the clear heel.
The one line alone where he mentioned the fans doing it like in front of the fans, and I'm like, oh well, it's a little like it could be thrown away among all the other things that he was saying, but he mentioned the fans in a way that made them cheer, and I was like, well, they at least want us to cheer him for now. But there's more shades of gray than there used to be.
Yeah, and Beth Phoenix calling him an upgrade, or his entrance theme an upgrade after he interrupted LA Knight, you know, just stuff like that. I when they both arrived at the same time, I really liked how Knight got out of the car immediately going into his act, and then like he's one foot out the door and he's already going, yeah, yeah. You can feel like he's about to say, let me talk. And he then behaves as if he didn't even realize there was anyone else around, let alone a camera. So I love the idea that this guy just walks around like that anyway. And then he tells Grimes, you live under a bridge. And Grimes goes, I'm so rich, I live under two bridges. So at least they gave me a little something tonight, because those video segments, they have spent weeks of this program before LA Knight was involved to a great extent, or was it after? Well, whatever the timeline is, this is the one thing going into this takeover that actually has more than a 2-week build, I think. And they have spent so much of that time making Knight and Grimes look like pathetic, worthless losers, that you have to expect DiBiase to just take the belt and go home, give it to Jake Atlas, give it to somebody else. Don't, you know, never mind, I guess this generation doesn't deserve my $1 million advice or whatever, because these guys have just been absolute losers who can't get anything accomplished. So putting them both in these videos where they're just desperately trying to appeal to DiBiase just furthered it that much more. And, you know, you can forgive that for Knight since he's the heel, and it's not the worst thing, especially with a character like Grimes, to give him, you know, unsavory characteristics. He already has plenty. He said himself in the promo tonight, I am kind of smelly, but I mean, it's just, at this point, the way that they've told this story, if you have only theoretically, if you were to tune in and only watch this storyline of these two wrestlers, you would think that these guys can't win a match, can't please anybody, can't achieve any of their goals. Why the hell are they the ones in this match? But then my bigger problem with it, I do agree with you, Kelly, that I could see it going either way. There are reasons for either guy to hold it, so there is that. It's kind of a coin flip. It might come down to whether or not they think that LA Knight is on the fast track to a bigger show, like he probably should be. But adding in the damn ladder, there's no reason for this to be a ladder match, apart from, I guess, the visual of just having the $1 million belt there. But adding in the ladder at this point just feels like another lazy way to be like, oh, crap, we only had 2 weeks. Let's try to convince people that this is going to be a special special show. Throw a gimmick on there. So I rolled my eyes big time at that.
I felt that way, but I thought that because it's a new championship up there that, but that they kind of got away with it. But I'd love to know if that was a happy accident or, ladder matches historically have been used for this kind of thing where they were looking at the, what was it, SummerSlam 95 card, and they realized, oh, this entire thing's going to suck. What do we do? Or 94, 93, I don't remember. And so they made that Razor Shawn. I mean, that Razor Shawn first ladder match was an audible because they realized that they had a show that on paper there was going to be no good wrestling on it. And they used a ladder match to get out of that, and the rest is history. So there were three other matches on this show. Let's just wedge them all together because a couple were enhancement matches. Opening match was Austin Theory versus Oney Lorcan. Lorcan wins a singles match on NXT TV. Be still, Nate's heart. 12:35, Oney over Austin. This is just kind of a sub-story to the Gargano versus Dunn storyline that seems like it'll be potentially continuing on coming out of this pay-per-view. Now, for me, it seems like the one to turn would be Dunn, but right now, Gargano, people are cheering the way. They like the annoying crap they're doing, so that might be an uphill battle. We also have Mercedes Martinez versus Amari Miller. Martinez goes over in 17 seconds after being attacked by Xia Li. Still gets a very quick win over an unnamed enhancement talent. Thank you, Joel Pearl, on Twitter, telling Tom, who told me that that this talent is named Amari Miller. We also had August Gray and Ika Manjiro versus Grizzled Young Veterans. GYV goes over in 4:58. We got an email about who is Ika Manjiro. Tell me more. I can't tell you more than what's on Wikipedia other than to say I dug it. I thought that it was a fun, silly, lower mid-card act. I like anybody whose wrestling is a little bit different. They're bringing a little bit something different to the table, and I thought that that he is. Eichemann is a portmanteau of a couple of Japanese words. I don't know, but it's essentially a term that has come to mean a really cool guy who also seems like he possibly is erudite and has feelings. That word doing some real heavy lifting, but that's what an Eichemann is, and I think it's funny that he would call himself that. And this was to set up a tornado tag match that will be on next week's show. So GYV, Thatcher, Ciampa, none of them make the cut for TakeOver, but that's what's going to happen when you've got a large roster. Let's go to an email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. It looks like the In Your House card is shaping up nicely. I'm quite intrigued by the six-man tag match and its winner-take-all stipulation. I feel like there's a weird dynamic where Bronson just won, but MSK have had the belts for a while. What do you all think? Also, I know Darrell will probably talk about this, but EO, that certainly adds a new wrinkle back into the women's roster. Lastly, can any of you tell us more about Gray's tag partner? Oh, already did that. Thanks as always, Go VIP, and office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. All right, on the remaining matches and whatever else I missed, Tom.
Beth Phoenix says, Austin Theory is looking to rid NXT of Oney Lorcan once and for all. Gee, finally, at long last. Okay. it was fine, I guess, and they used the It was one of those things that it wasn't about the match. It was about what was going on at ringside between Gargano and Dunn. And it just, they need, I mentioned the off the page intrigue that got added to this match. This takeover main event 6 days ago. They need something that's on the page to add a little bit. So now we've got a little bit of tension between Gargano and Dunn. Okay, fine. Sadie's and the unnamed girl, who I'd have to pull up a different window to remember one of her two names that Joel and I batted back and forth a couple times. This didn't really add anything. I think that if it did add anything, it just added a little bit of confidence that this is actually going to be on the main takeover card rather than being a glorified pre-show match. Because what I was going to say is you'd have to go back a long way to find a match that had less build than this one going into a takeover. But then I remembered Balor versus Thatcher at Triple X less than a year ago. So you don't have to go back that far. But I don't feel like this one added too much. And then GYV versus the 205 jobbers. Jiro looked like he's probably pretty fun. And I know these guys have been tagging on 205. So people who are want to actually go out of their way for that kind of thing, maybe Jiro's providing the entertainment for you there. But this match was just whatever. All I can say is that the fact that these two teams are feuding with one another is the reason why I don't think that Hit Row is, well, one of the reasons why I don't think that Top Dollar and Ashanti the Adonis are up next in line for tag title shots. I think they need to prove themselves as a team a little bit more as well, but this feels like the unofficial number one contenders feud.
Hey.
All right, I'll start with Austin Theory, Oney Lorcan. I was really happy, like you said, Be Still My Heart, Oney Lorcan won a singles match on NXT. I think this is probably the way to go, and I'm not just saying that because I'm an Oney Lorcan guy, but I think this is the way to go simply because Oney Lorcan has been kind of portrayed as Pete Dunne's heavy, I guess, especially since Danny Burch has been gone. Actually, he's been like Pete Dunne's heavy for a while now, but he was, you know, with Burch. But now with Burch out, I felt like this is probably a good thing for Oney Lorcan to get a win here and make him look a little bit more, a little bit stronger, a little more dominant, in that role with Pete Dunne. But not only that, I mean, storyline wise and everything and story of the match, it certainly made sense as well. And one thing I said it to these guys, this is completely stupid, random thing, but like, it's just kind of funny. Every week or past couple of weeks, we've seen Johnny Gargano and Austin Theory wear those headbands, the armbands with the Way logo on them. Well, I watch it on YouTube TV, and for some reason it comes in like half pixelated half the time. And I just see the W's, and I think it's like they're wearing John Cena's Word Life like armbands and stuff that they're, and I always spend about 3 seconds going, why are they paying tribute to Cena there? But anyway, I think that this was this looks like a good way to go for them. I'm glad to see Oney Lorcan actually get a win. Martinez and Jobber McJobber Pants, as I called her in my hits and misses, because I wasn't sure what her name was at the time. I actually really liked this whole segment. I think I actually called it a perfect 3-minute segment, I think, in the hits and misses. The reason I liked it is it was a very quick reminder that Tian Sha and Mercedes Martinez had a beef. You can't get everything on a show. I wish they spent a little bit more time on it because I've really been invested in Tian Sha. But that said, I like the fact that they took 3 minutes-ish, however long it was, and reminded us that they had some beef, that they've got they've got a match coming up. And it still made Mercedes Martinez look really strong. I mean, she got attacked right off the bat. She didn't even make it to the entrance ramp when she got attacked. But then she immediately started the match. She told the ref to ring the bell and then just flattened her opponent. And so it made her look incredibly strong. and really kind of raised my intrigue. Not that I wasn't already intrigued, but really raised my intrigue for the match and feud overall. So I definitely enjoyed that. And then the Grizzly Young Vets versus August Gray and Ike Manjaro. This was a really good, you know, TV tag match. I don't really know much about Ike Manjaro myself. I liked what I saw. I thought he had some cool, you know, unique moves, things like that. You know, and I really liked his look as well. He really stood out to me, you know, compared to the other guys in the ring. You know, just kind of the hair, the color scheme that he chose and everything. I liked it. I don't really think there was anything else. Oh, the other thing I just wanted to quickly throw in there was we got to see Doc Hendricks on the show, and I thought that was kind of fun.
We did. We saw him twice in the Slam Jam segments. We covered everything except Bobby Fish is sparring because he wants to get ready for his return to the show. And we also had Mackenzie Mitchell talking to Breezango, and the best part of that was Fandango, for no reason, walking back into the shot at the end and briefly showing Mackenzie his upper chest a little bit better with his open shirt. Bizarre, but it was so bizarre. I chuckled at it.
We also had Ever-Rise quoting Biggie on the list of things that you certainly didn't expect to see tonight, and yet another segment that is purposefully designed to make the talent seem pathetic and worthless, and like, why would you ever tune in to see them? But you know, at least if Austin Theory couldn't get it done, at least Bobby Fish is finally going to rid NXT of Oney Lorcan once and for all.
Right. The nonstop, the runaway train that is Oney Lorcan. All right. 36:58 wrestling time on this show. We'll see you soon. A lot of podcasts in the future of us. We are, tomorrow, Tom and I will be recording NXT 8 years back, and we are going to cover a major title change on that one. Then Tom will be doing the Blake and Sal show, talking about NXT TakeOver. I was on the Blake and Sal show last week, previewing the now already worked New Japan Dominion show that had a major, major title change as well. And then in a few days, we'll all be doing this again and Thursday, I also will be talking to Triple H and others on the media call. And then on Sunday, you'll hear us convene for a hostile takeover of Wrestling Night in America, although I will join late because I will likely be on another Triple H media call after the show. So that is that's a busy few days for all of us, but I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or spookymilk.games, Tom.
And I am at Tom Stelf, and I'm going to go a Googling to see if I can find out where they dug up old Doc Hendrick. Haven't seen him since the 90s. Where's he been?
Indeed. Special, special event signing for them. One night only. Nate.
I think it was wherever they dug Todd Pettengill out last time they did it in your house. Although they're digging him out again, I guess, to do a pre-show or something like that. I forget. But anyway, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the hits and misses for NXT, the All Perspective for SmackDown, and I do this show. So that's what I do, and we'll be back on Sunday.
All right, folks. We will see you in 5. Cheers.